Welcome back to the House of Cards show. I'm Jackie Hearn.
I'm Charlotte Henry.
And I am Roberto Villegas.
And we are talking today, House of Cards Season 1, Episode 12 of the U.S. Netflix version. And of course, we also talk about the U.K. show. We're going to be wrapping up and tying those back in together mm-hmm. in the last final episode. So this episode, there's various storylines. Frank is asked by the president to go and vet Raymond Tusk for the position of vice president. What are your general thoughts, guys, on this storyline? Obviously Frank feels like he needs to get in. He asks, doesn't he? That's right. He yes. asks the president, and it's almost as if the president sets him up to ask to go and visit Raymond Tusk and vent him.
It's interesting because ultimately this episode we finally learn Frank's endgame. We learn exactly what it is that he has been sort of planning and plotting and getting to. Last time we learned sort of his potential path to got there and how he got there by, you know, all the killing and things like that. But we learned that this was his main goal. I think actually, to kind of jump to it, I like that there was a bit of a twist, that Frank thought it was going to go one way and things went absolutely the other, because for a moment there, it felt like Frank had forgotten that other people play the game too, if that makes any sense.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. He definitely, it's obvious that the president has kind of set him up for that, knowing that he wants to be vice president. And, it's kind of surprising to me that Frank would think for a minute that they didn't, or the president wouldn't think that he wanted that position. I mean, what's her name? Vasquez, Linda Vasquez. She knows that he wants to be president and is trying to help him get that position. And, it's kind of interesting because when the show starts off, they're interviewing this woman. I didn't catch her name, but she had some kind of leadership role in either the House or the Senate, and she just absolutely doesn't say a word. She has no personality whatsoever, and it's kind of interesting to know. I mean, we don't ever know, but the list of names that the president's given are apparently none of them are working out, and so. Was that Vasquez's efforts to help Frank? Is she really that indebted to him for helping her son get into college?
I mean,
I just find it interesting that Frank is so desperate to be vice president. I mean, there's a very strong case that he has more power as a whip running part of Capitol Hill than the sort of symbolic figure of vice president. Now, I understand it puts him in the Oval Office and it puts him in the White House, and that's ultimately what he wants. But there is an argument in practical terms about what Frank wants to achieve, that being the chief operator on Capitol Hill, there's argument he has more power doing that. And I think later on, I think we see him being quite frustrated with the sort of merely symbolic nature of vice president. Obviously, he sees that the real power is outweighed, the loss of real power, if you like, is outweighed by the sort of rise in profile and the position it puts him in. Basically means he has a clear run to be a presidential candidate next time around. If he wants that, he's the one. If anything happens to Garrett Walker now, he's the one in prime position. And I guess that's what he's decided. And also the status and the power, and that's ultimately what he wants. He wants to get himself into the Oval Office. I find the dynamic between him and Tusk quite boring, actually. I don't like, it's just sort of two middle-aged men butting egos,
it's kind of a mirror match between the two, except Tusk is a lot less charming. Like, in other words...
Yeah, I think they don't like each other because they're quite similar. I agree. Yeah,
if Frank, for example, had said, as opposed to going for power, had gone for money, he would have been Tusk. Like, he would have been that sort of vehicle, had all these sort of things, and had other people in his favor just by money. You know, it's obvious that Tusk has the president kind of in his back pocket and able to kind of steer and...
Yeah,
and,
although, even with all his money... Tusk only uses the money to buy the power Frank has.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, if and that's sort of why Frank, you know, I say the joke that Frank just basically forgot that other people were in this game because when he goes to Tusk and after he kind of gets that all done, you know, it turns out that he just says, you know, no one plays me. This is my game. Like, you know, the way Frank views the world, this is Frank's world. We're all just kind of existing in it until we've kind of worn out our use to him.
For sure.
And things like that. But, you know, going back to Frank as to why he'd want to be vice president, I see it more as a, this becomes sort of the stepping stone. Like, I could see him in the future running for president, pulling off the, you know, I was part of vice president, I did all these things, and you should vote for me and my, whoever my running mate is, maybe Stamper, I don't know. Which would be amazing. But that kind of idea where it's, he knows he has to hit that point to then get to the end point, which is president of the United States. You have to.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think ultimately that is what it comes down to.
That absolutely the position of vice president is not one that's been known. I mean, it's almost sort of like being the first lady, where you get these little roles and projects and things you can work on. But again, the only reason you would want it if you're looking towards moving up is if you are going to stick around for 8 years and hope that you're next. Or one of them, the president dies, or the president has to resign. So he's. It's a very, very big ambitious move for him to want to leave his like you said, the power that he has as a majority whip.
And Frank has killed before. I don't see him pulling some Machiavellian thing and like killing the president per se. That's my opinion, at least right now.
So I know a lot of our viewers,
having seen what he's done to Peter Russo,
that's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Anything is possible with Frank. That's what you're meant to think.
So, Roberto, you have, again, just to remind our viewers, our listeners, some of them, you know, some of you may have watched all of the show. That's the great thing about the show, is that you could binge watch all of it all at once or piece by piece. And Roberto, you're going piece by piece or episode by episode. So what are your thoughts about this? Why would he want to be president and what is his, I mean, vice president, and what do you think his end?
Beyond essentially getting to presidency, you know, either at the end of a term or something happens. I mean, because ultimately, a lot of Frank's power has been not just in favor or stuff like that, but just in pure information and knowing things about people more so than they do. And you know, in this episode, we kind of learned that Frank definitely never wants to be played. Like, he knows the game. He's aware other people, you know, he forgot other people play the game, and he learned that this episode. I guess I would think his end game beyond being present, I mean, maybe...
It's a pretty good end game.
It's the only thing I can think of is getting to the presidency and sort of utilizing it. Because ultimately, he wanted to be VP the first time go round. He figured he was going to be there. That's going to be his next thing. And then they said, well, no, I'm sorry, Frank. You've got to go there. I mean, ultimately, he probably will end up screwing over the president in some way. Because, you know, at the beginning of the series, you know, I think I forget what episode it was, either one or two, he basically put in motion the, I'm going to bring everyone down, or I'm going to get there, and this is, you know, you snuffed me out the first time, all right, we don't play that way, and sort of has been building to sort of either bring everyone down with him, or pull some type of move where everyone else is beneath him. And I, like I said, presidency is the only thing I can think of. It's the only thing that seems to be the end game. The problem I see is that with Frank, it's always his never-ending power quest. It's always his never-ending thing. And once you hit president, that's as high as you get within the United States. That makes sense. You know, not like we have a dictatorship here or some... you know, some type of crazy thing like that. And my thing is, I don't know where Frank goes beyond that.
Yeah, that's true. That's I guess his a step beyond that would be trying to change the Constitution in some way to become this.
And at that point, I would honestly say the show had gone off the rails, and I would.
Agree.
Like, everyone would be like, "All right, this is we're done with the show now." Because the thing is, that's what scares me now is knowing that okay, if he's going to be vice president, and it's obvious he's going to be vice president, then his end game is actually his next sort of echelon, because that's what he tends to do. He goes up in the ranks. That's sort of been his thing, is that, okay, well, it's got to be president next. Well, then what happens after president? And knowing Frank as the person he is, he's never satisfied. He's never happy.
She's never satisfied.
What I'm saying is that I don't know what that means. I don't know what comes, like that scares me now, and I think about it, because if Frank becomes president, what's the next echelon for him? And then what does that mean for his character? And what does that mean for everybody else?
Yeah, yeah, that's
good. It's scary. It's spooky. But
and I agree with what you said, Charlotte, about that dynamic between Frank and Raymond Tusk being kind of just boring, and I really hate Tusk, and I every
he's
time
a very dislikable character.
He's on the screen, I just want to go back to Zoe, go back to Claire or something. I don't want to watch this, because
I don't like it, because the thing is that, like, I don't necessarily hate Tusk, because I see him as sort of the...
Well, I don't hate. Hate's a strong word.
No, I'm saying, like, I don't even get really bored with Tusk. Like, I enjoyed the dynamic between the two, because for me it was that mirror match. You know, it was that, you know, Frank almost facing himself.
He's interesting for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And I think it's just, I think that the whole point of Tusk is to show that Frank is, like you said, knows how to play the game, but he does it so much more charismatically. Yeah. You know, with more charisma, I should say. I loved one little line. There's all these one little lines that I pick up on with Frank, and which makes him such a great character. But when he goes to Tusk's house, he arrives late at night, and Tusk's wife puts him up in a room, and she's like, "Would you like a knock in the morning?" And it's so like. He just says, "No, I have an alarm on my phone," and the way he says it is, it's just, he's such a. I mean, of course you have an alarm on your phone. Who doesn't know that? But he says it in such a sweet way, you know. And he's got these like very like down to earth ways of talking to people. It's kind of like the way he got up in front of that church to talk to those people. He knew how to talk to those people. He made them a sandwich. He prayed with them. Yeah. But then when he's with Claire or with someone else, he's a whole different personality.
Yeah. See, what I love about this episode is that, like, my favorite moment of the episode, maybe it's why I like the Tusk and Frank interactions, because there's a moment where Tusk reveals it all and Frank's mask drops for a bit. And sort of, you know, that down-to-earth person, he realizes, oh crap, I am essentially facing off against myself. There's no need for these masks, these formalities, if you will. Let's just get to the game. It becomes very apparent as you know, Tusk says, I need a favor from you, and you can't ask about, like, well, I can't do that. Like, you essentially get Frank that we've seen all the time, but that no one else has really interacted with beyond Claire.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think what bothered, or just I just got tired of watching, was it was scene after scene of Tusk
tired
avoiding
of hunting sequences.
What's that?
Did you get tired of hunting in the lake sequences?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. And then the way that Tusk would shut down the conversation continuously by talking Mandarin on the phone, or having to answer the phone with those stupid speak yes, speak no, you know, things. It was just kind of, I don't know.
I think that was the point. I think that was the thing that he was trying to get under Frank's skin, you know, because Frank at that point did not know that he wasn't vetting Tusk. He didn't know the flip had happened. Once he realized that they were vetting him, he's like, oh, you're going to play that game now. Okay, well then let me get into Frank mode, as opposed to the sort of calm, cool, collected kind of guy that he's been sort of playing as. Because again, at that point it felt like he was just trying to get under his skin, trying to provoke the real Frank. Because, you know, near the end of the episode, you know, Tusk had said he talked with the president, and he had essentially got the president to say, you know, he sort of voted against Frank, if you will. Like, he said something, I forgot the exact line, but he said, like, I told him not to pick you, you know, because I didn't trust you, anything like that. He still doesn't. But because Tusk sort of plays that exact same game Frank is playing, just in a different way, he just has a different sort of hand, he's sort of telling... I'm sorry, I'm just laughing at the fact Jackie Hearn's cat wants to be part of this discussion and wants to voice her opinion on this whole thing.
This would happen. yeah.
Anyways, the point being that once it's revealed that they've been vetting him the whole time, and that Tusk is sort of doing the Frank thing of, I need a favor from you without you asking kind of thing, Frank doesn't play that. I think that might be why I like it more than you two, just because of that. But I will say a lot of that is just sort of this filler to get to that point.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, I believe, which is where my frustration came from.
Right.
So I think we've kind of wrapped up Frank.
Yeah.
Roberto, can you talk to us a little bit about how we got here?
Of course. Well, first up, before we go into our next thing, let's actually thank a couple of sponsors, specifically one, that being UK2.net. They cover all the bandwidth costs here at the British Tech Network, and they're really good at sort of hosting sites, building your website, sort of web addresses, all that fun jazz. I know, Charlotte, you use it for your .com extensively, and they've helped you out extensively in the past.
Yeah, they're brilliant. I bought domains off them. I bought web hosting off them. Their customer service really is instant. Their customer service is excellent. We've been sharing all of us have been sharing some tech horror stories where we've been trying to get hold of companies who we can't get hold of. Well, you don't ever have that problem with UK2. They're at the end of the phone, they're at the end of email. They've got live chat on their website. I've never had a problem with UK2 that's lasted more than half an hour, and the half an hour is me finding time to get in touch with them. Their customer service is fantastic. You know, they've got automatic backup stuff of websites, so you know they can really help you out running a website yourself with that. With, you know, everything is there in there, and they keep updating their software as well. So yeah. Everything to run your website is just there, and they do a fantastic job. No, I would really recommend UK2. My website has been running much more smoothly since I've moved over to them. I would only ever buy domains off them now.
Yeah, whether if you need to definitely host in the UK, and if you just need either a simple site or maybe you need something a bit more hardcore, get yourself a virtual private server, head on over to UK2.net. And of course, if you want to get some offers and codes for it, head to our site, BritishTechNetwork.com/sponsors, for a list of offers and codes available to you.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about UK2 as well, that it's exactly what you say. You can either run, you know, a simple WordPress install, which you can install in 5 minutes,
yep,
or you can run a multiple page with all sorts of subdomains and all sorts of things, and it does it really easily. So, I mean, they really are excellent, I would recommend.
Yeah, they're definitely, like I said, if you need hosting in the UK, head on over there. That they are top-notch and excellent people. And we thank them for hosting all the bandwidth here at the British Tech Network. Let's move on to the more exciting thing, that being Zoe, because I know you two are huge, huge Zoe fans, and this is the episode where I will say, if I had saw this Zoe from day one, I think I would be as big a fan of Zoe as you guys were.
I actually wasn't a big fan of Zoe in the beginning, and I'm liking her more and more. She's getting far more serious about, and she's extremely dedicated to getting the story. And, you know, I think my problem with her before was that it seemed like she didn't really care what the story was as long as it was sensational. But now she's really on a mission. Charlotte, I should turn this to you. What are your thoughts on her?
I think you've hit the nail on the head, actually. She has gone from being a sort of sensationalist, just want to get on the front page and in front of a camera, to really working hard. And she is still sensationalist, and she still is happy. You know, she is still very good on TV and all those things. But actually, I think she's seen the value of what she's doing, as well as just enjoying getting one up on people. And I think that's moved her on a bit as a character.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what I enjoyed specifically was just, you know, because, like, I had an opinion of Zoe at the beginning of, like, well, I guess she's here. She's a reporter. She's going to be this sort of voice of Frank and sort of be there and sort of just, you know, like you had said, Charlotte, just whatever sensational, whatever the story is, make that the story. But what I like about this is that once she starts getting into the groove of digging into a story and sort of trying to learn the actual real story, like, she doesn't stop. And I like that about her as a character at this point, because I'm just like, this is the Zoe I wish I had seen. I wish I had saw her kind of, I wish they started this arc, let's say this, about maybe three, you know, four episodes ago. Like, I wish this had been like the, like Zoe playing like a two-part game where she's still getting feed from Frank and still playing that, but on the side, she's sort of still digging the story and has this sort of backup ammo. I wish she had kind of done that from day one, but I guess, you know, having sex with your source definitely can kind of muddle things a bit.
You have to remember she's very young as well.
Yeah.
And she's likes to think she's big and brave and strong, but actually she's quite young and she's quite naive, and I think the way the character develops actually reflects that rather well. What's interesting is actually what all that Frank has taught her kind of comes back to haunt Frank, because she's become a good journalist having, you know, manipulated and played Frank and worked around Frank, but actually it now is coming back to cause Frank problems, and because of the relationship with Frank, she's a much better journalist.
Yeah, she knows how to, not only how to do a good story, but she's now learning how to dig into a story and how to do it. And like, you're right, that she kind of learned all that Frank. Like, I like that this is the Zoe we're seeing. I like that we're seeing this. I wish we'd seen it sooner in the series, just because I like the idea of having a character that has one up on our main character, if nothing more than for more intrigue and more kind of double-crossing and things like that, potentials. But that being said, I like that this is kind of where it's, you know, it's coming to a head right now, and that Zoe's starting to put together the pieces of, like, wait a minute, that was this day, that was, and starting to figure, you know, sort of filling in everything together.
And also, this is the episode where she's now finally admitting to someone that Frank is her source. She
right.
finally admits, and it's because Lucas basically says, I'm in love with you, and he wants to know who it is that she's having sex with. And she says to him, basically, everyone does it, or I can't remember exactly what the term was, but I don't think she would have had the confidence to admit that or say that if she hadn't had that conversation previously with Janie a couple episodes ago, where she admitted to having sex
right.
earlier in her career to get
yeah.
the story.
I mean, there's a couple of elements to that. First of all, I completely agree with you that we're now seeing the consequences of that conversation with Janine. I 100% agree with that. I think seeing this older, more established journalist, I think she's actually, instead of looking down on Janine, has finally respecting Janine, which is what she should do, because Janine is a very established, very good journalist, and she's a bit old school, but actually Zoe could, there's a lot worse than Zoe could have than learning from someone like her. I didn't like her telling Lucas her source. It's kind of journalism 101, you don't reveal that your source, and he's not her editor anymore. It's one thing if she has to answer to Lucas, but she doesn't. And it actually kind of shows that she's still got that naivety and a bit of, she's kind of showing off a bit, because you shouldn't do that.
No, you're right. But I wonder if it's more to do with the fact that she has some feelings for Lucas as well. Even if she doesn't know how to admit it to herself. Like, the beauty part of Zoe is that she had learned a lot from Frank, learned the game, and sort of understood that portion. But she's still a good person, whereas Frank really isn't a good person. And sometimes that good person portion can come out a lot, you know, very frequently. And it's good, and I like that about Zoe as a character, that she can kind of ride that line. But I think that she cares about Lucas a lot and sort of has figured out that this is the person she should be and this is what she wants to be as a journalist, as a reporter, as a person, that she has to kind of, you know, almost pull what Peter Russo did, sort of admit everything and just bear all as best as she can. And especially the person that she cares about, especially the person that she's probably in love with, you know.
I don't think that we really see her caring a whole lot about Lucas, but I think that the reason is because her character, her she's so devoted to, she's power hungry too.
Oh yeah, she's laser focused on the story.
Journalism, and she wants to get to a certain place, and if a boyfriend stands in the way, then that won't work. And I think that if that wasn't the case, maybe she would have a relationship, a real relationship with this guy Lucas. But we don't really see it. I think what we see is her kind of pushing him aside because of her bigger agenda, her professional agenda.
Maybe. I mean, it's tricky, but regardless of that fact, she definitely is laser focused. She definitely is focused on getting a story done. That's like I said, I wish I saw more of that Zoe in the series. Not because the Zoe I saw in the series is bad. I did enjoy her as a character. I just really enjoy the idea of having somebody that has one up on Frank in the world, and having that be a constant threat, and to see that sort of. How that forms over.
Is that why we have Tusk?
That's true.
Because Tusk is the only person that has the means. He has the means to counter Frank's power.
Maybe Tusk would have been the equal thing. Just the idea of knowing that there had been a force like that. That's sort of been was my only issue with the whole thing. I just wanted to know. Like only now that it's been revealed that there are people that have the upper that could potentially have the upper arm on Frank, I would just love to have seen those characters. Or those traits of those characters come out a little sooner just to have that constant threat. Again, only for just double-crossing and espionage. Because ultimately, I think like everyone's arc has been pretty good up until this point anyways.
There was one other thing about Zoe. She, as she's trying to look into who pressured Russo to not say anything during Was it the watershed bill or the
watershed?
Yeah, and you know she said somebody's obviously got to him and strong armed him, and she thinks it's Womack. I should have done my homework, and I apologize. The last thing I was going to do is look that person up. I don't remember who Womack is.
Terry Womack was the head of the Black Caucus who Frank is using to move into position.
That's right.
He's one of the first beneficiaries of Frank killing people. He becomes the majority leader, I think.
Yeah.
And then she finds out that it was Russo that showed up to get that that story going, or that editorial issue. And so she realizes it's Frank. And I love that she starts to get scared, you know, and there's a scene...
I think she's genuinely scared of when she realizes what Frank can do, because she suddenly... starts putting two and two together and realizing that if this has happened if Frank is involved in this to this level with Russo, has he killed Russo? And I think that's what starts to scare her, that the fact that two and two in this case might well make five.
Do you think that she absolutely. Now I feel a little silly. You're absolutely right. She is putting it together that there's some reason why Russo has committed suicide, and it's odd. She does go to Christine Gallagher, who was Russo's aide and girlfriend, and just runs straight into her office and says, "You deserve to know what you know about you know where was he that day." And that's kind of how the show ends. But you know we can come back to it if you want. But Christine goes and looks at the calendar, and she's saying, "What was Russo doing?" During around the election, it was sometime in January 24th, and you can see on Christine's face, she remembers the day going back to episode 2 where Christine and Russo are in Russo's apartment playing around with toothpaste. It's really disgusting. And Russo gets a call and has to go and just runs out the door. So she knows that there is something odd because she said, "What kind of work? Where are you going?" I actually went back to watch that part of it.
Yeah.
And he said, it's a tax incentive issue. I've got to go. And so Christine would know what Russo was doing, so she knew that there was something odd at that time, probably thinking that he was going off to sleep with someone else. But now it all comes back right on her face at the end of that episode. But I love the way that's why I think that in this episode, the Zoe story shines through because of the way it just sort of builds up very quickly. And, you know, Zoe is on the kind of the war path. She knows what's going on, and she's trying to get the information out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's the focus for sure. Do you want to move on to the third part really quick?
Sure.
Before we do, I do have to read one more sponsor, that being for the Network Union. They're an authorized BT business partner licensed to sell global and UK services. They handle a lot of the backbone sort of connections when they need wide area area network connectivity, such as MPLS, VPLS, Ethernet to Internet leased lines. They have a unique design workflow. They're definitely a great company there in terms of that, especially if you're in the UK, if you're sort of the guys that handle the IT, the people that sort of handle all the bigger backbone connections or need that kind of pipeline, especially for server farms, things like that, head on over to netunion.co/BritTech for more information on how to show your appreciation for the British Tech Network and hook up with those guys.
So, I didn't mean to talk over too much about the Zoe thing. I don't know if you had more to add, Charlotte.
Yeah, more to add. Feel free to add. I just want to make sure I got the thing there.
But
No, I think we summed that up pretty well. I think we're starting to see a new stage of Zoe, and I quite like that she's gone from being a very good sensationalist hack to kind of digging in a bit.
Yeah.
So I think the final story arc of this show is the Jillian and Claire relationship.
What a nasty piece of work.
Go for it. How so?
I mean, she played Jillian to get her. Now she's done the classic thing of like, oh, you're pregnant, bye. Like, just horrible, horrible. No, I mean, it kind of would make Frank weep. It's so cruel. And such a, I mean, I can't believe it's happening. I mean, given how litigious Americans can be and how easily Americans sue each other, I cannot believe Claire has even tried to pull this off. It's a pretty disgraceful way to behave.
That's true. That's true. I mean, she's basically changing Jillian's contract just out of nowhere. She says, you know, you disobeyed me. And Jillian's saying, no, we have a partnership. I don't work for you. And she's like, yes, you do, basically. And no, you're absolutely right. I think it just goes to show that she knows how powerful her relationship, you know, with Frank, she knows how powerful she is herself. So she doesn't care. Yeah, she's not going to get sued.
And it's just occurred to me, actually, there might be another more personal issue. Frank and her don't have children.
Mm.
And it's alluded to a couple of times to this point, isn't it?
Yes.
And you sort of think she suddenly sees Jillian doing some of the things that she wants to do herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so decides to be cruel. It's a kind of triggered by a jealousy thing. I don't know. She might just be thinking in pure business terms, but I feel like part of it is triggered by the fact there's plenty of times where she's very happy not to have children, to go to the fabulous parties and run off to New York with Adam and all the rest of it. Yeah. But I think there's occasionally moments where, and this is one of them, where it sort of flashes that she would like children.
I think that definitely the way that the story is written, that we are supposed to make that connection. I think you're absolutely right that she feels that she's hitting menopause now. She's never going to have kids. She's gotten to that point in her life where she's starting to realize that. And yeah, no, I think that we're absolutely supposed to feel that way about Claire. Because why else would a woman do that to another woman? You know, just say, oh, you're fired.
The only reason I can see is... Beyond, again, you know, we have another duality of a sort of base evil character of Claire and a really base good character of Janine, right?
Jillian?
Jillian, sorry. Yeah. I knew it was a J name. Of Jillian, and they start clashing heads because Jillian is good but doesn't like getting pushed around kind of good. Like, she doesn't like the fact, she goes to, you know, Claire, are we really going to work with these guys? These are complete, you know, these are idiots. These are the guys that, like, were against the bill that was going to help us out and things like that, that was supposed to be the thing. And it's like, yeah, but they helped us with the water filter. They just want to film. They just want to do some PR stuff. He's like, I am not going to be the voice of something I don't agree with. And I think that those two ideals also equally clash heads in addition to everything else. And it's just sort of enough to say, all right, fine. you're out.
You're absolutely right, because Jillian's second-guessing Claire's decision to go with the lobbyist.
Not second-guess Claire.
And Claire's supposed to be this good liberal, you know, technically. And so, you know, for her to kind of sell out to a lobbyist company, or one of the biggest lobbyist organizations.
The biggest oil drilling, environmentally angry companies.
Yeah, yeah. She's totally threatened by Jillian.
Oh, yeah.
I think she is threatened by Jillian. And also, but she knows Jillian is quite vulnerable. You know, the first time Jillian and Claire meet, Jillian's ill and can't afford to go to the doctor. You know, she uses Jillian's health and her well-being, her physicality against her, because Claire is this kind of serene, beautiful thing, swans in her, and her designer dresses to the office. And she uses that against Jillian as well.
You're absolutely right. I've forgotten about that. She totally takes control over people like that. And, you know, the way that Claire just shows up at Jillian's house when Jillian is
out. You're going to my doctor. This is what's happening. Blah,
yeah.
Blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, if my boss ever knocked on my front door, I would not answer it. I would turn on the lights, kind of creep down. I mean, that's the scariest thing in the world.
It's not boss. It's not boss at the point. It's potential.
That's true. You're right. You're right. I've forgotten about that. But yeah. Interesting. Interesting how that's going to go, and how you know, something's got to come out of her firing Jillian.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that Jillian isn't some little wallflower that's going to be walked on. You know this doesn't end here with Jillian just leaving the office quietly.
Nope. And that's why I like Jillian as well, because she is what if Claire had been good and stuff like that, and had used the power driven for the good of the environment or whatever it is, because that's basically what happened. They clash heads and they sort of bust up against each other, because at one point, you know, they're both power hungry, but one wants to use that power for good, the other one for her own gain.
That's an excellent point. You're absolutely right. She would be, that would be Claire if she wasn't caught up in this political power hungry environment.
Exactly.
So, right. Anyways, I think that's the end of it. Is there any other final thoughts on?
I think
we've
said all
episode?
We can until the next episode. I think
sounds
that
good.
Got to say, always a pleasure talking to you all.
Yeah.
Charlotte, where can people find you online these days?
I'm at charlotteahenry.com and at charlotteahenry on Twitter. Are the easiest places to find me. I'm off to find out what country I'm still going to be living in.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're probably going to be covering the event that we cannot talk about, lest we get completely, utterly shamed by the British government.
All right. And I am Jackie Hearn at JackieHearn.com.
Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent44 there on the Twitters. And just if you ever watch any of my content where I can talk about the event that I can't talk about here, head to Cosplay.tv and watch anything there.
So, yeah. No, we'll... We're recording this show on the day of the Scottish referendum over in the UK, and no doubt we'll have plenty to say about it once the votes have been cast.
Yeah. Once everything's done, we'll do something. Who knows?
Great. All right. Till next time.
Lots of love, guys.
Okay. I do a lot of editing, so I'm gonna have to edit this. I cannot find the stop record button. All I see is a post publicly. So, I mean, and as soon as I guess I should just press that, and then as soon as it's done, I've got
anyway,
the link.
Guys, good show. I'm
thanks so much.
Take care.
Okay, take care. Guys. All right, bye-bye. Let's see. I'm just going to press this and see what happens. And I've got the link, so.
File at the end of it all.
Oh, okay.
Bryce was asking about if it's Hangouts, and it's asking the whole thing, and I was like,